If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Most High. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is how to deal with life's difficulties like a Mahatma and transcend them through forbearance and patience. So, if you're ready to tackle that topic, sit up straight, take a deep breath, and call your magnificent Mahatma self forward. Anoint yourself with your own unique spiritual flavor. There is only one of you. Even though that one within the quantum field is holographically replicated in every single quark of existence. Isn't that amazing? Even as you sit thinking that you're this singular enchilada, you actually are omnipresent, just not quite awakened to that yet. But every single thing that you do that draws you toward reality, toward truth, toward understanding who you are, why you're here, the purpose of all of this, every inclination towards that is leading you into that state in which there will no longer be a single sign of any difficulty. For you will have joined the ranks of the Mahatmas yourself. You are already a Mahatma. It's just you haven't quite awakened, perhaps, to that level, and therefore don't quite know how to operate within that skill set. So we'll begin looking at two very important, we could say the very bedrock and foundation of being a Mahatma. What is a Mahatma? It simply is a Sanskrit term that means a great soul or a masterful soul. So, if you'd like, let's do a little exercise here. I was having fun doing this the other day, and I found it tremendously effective. Not only was it effective, actually, it remained with me as a constant state. So perhaps it will for you too. You know, in the Bible, we're told to put on Christ. You may have come upon that phrase, where you literally imagine that you're putting on Christ like a garment, like you put on his whole being. It's donning your ideal self, your master self, your higher super person self, if you will. So a simple way to do that is simply to visualize in front of you an ideal form of yourself. It could be your commander self. It could be your Christ self. Just mock up. It doesn't have to be in any great degree. Just intend that that mock-up standing in front of you is you, all spiritually matured and filled out in your divine presentation. And now, just see yourself walking into that. See the back of that form, which is looking away from you. In other words, the back is facing you where you're sitting. See the back open, and now just step into that form. And you can use the form of Jesus the Christ. In fact, that's probably the safest form that you could possibly don. So put on Christ, if you will. Step into that. Ooh, doesn't it feel good? And feel the radiance that's coming from that vestiture, if you will. Imagine a beautiful countenance, beautiful serene forehead, large luminescent eyes, a gentle smile, powerful torso, and arms outstretched giving blessings and benediction to this planet, to all the planets in this solar system, to the very universe, to the very galaxy. See rays of light pouring forth from your palms, blessing everything and everyone. Now raise your arms out to either side. And just imagine that you're forming a circling with other light workers where you're holding hands. And let's hold hands around the galaxy, shall we? Just see the Milky Way galaxy and this tiny little speck we call Earth, this little tiny solar system. And we're embracing all of this vastness with our love and with our Christ itself, because you're already doing that in that level of the Christhood that you truly are. We all are. That's why we can always safely use the form of Jesus the Christ, because he was the absolute firstborn prototype of the perfected human in perfect relationship with the Father, Mother, God, operating through the power of the indwelling Holy Spirit. So he was a perfect exemplar of everything that we are moving into in our maturation, in our development. So you can do this, if you like, in the morning when you do your meditation. And as you encircle the galaxy or the planet, however you want to envision that for your morning work, just have a sense that you are joining in the collective Messiah, the collective sonship, in service to all life. Because that's the truth. That's what you're doing. Even though there's parts of you that's completely unaware of that, there are parts of you that are fully aware of that. So it's good to learn to think of ourselves in that higher context. Because as we think, so we are. So we manifest. We always embody what we identify with. So identify with the very highest you possibly can, would be my suggestion. So how to deal with life's difficulties like a Mahatma and transcend them through forbearance and patience. Huh. Well, let's start with a little intro from Sai Baba, what he has to say about that. All of the noble characteristics that a devotee must possess, none is more vital than forbearance. When you have forbearance, you shine with a peaceful, forgiving quality that remains undisturbed under all circumstances. When you have forbearance, then no matter how others treat you, whether they are caring and friendly, or whether they are hostile or indifferent towards you, you will feel only love towards them. So forbearance causes you to shine with a peaceful, forgiving quality that remains undisturbed under all circumstances. Wow, pretty high call to action, I would say. But we have to know that Sai Baba, who is who has come to grant us liberation and to lead all of humanity into a golden age and into self and God realization, we have to know that he would not give us a directive that was not possible for us to attain. So let's look at the reality of how we, most of us, experience life. And life is full of difficulties. No sooner is one dealt with, another is sure to arise. And Sai Baba has described life as a cot full of bugs. Bed bugs. I know what that's like because I've had bed bugs in India. It's not fun. So he says that from morning to night, there's one botheration after another. And the only thing that gives life any sweetness at all is our relationship with God. You know, so we have to find a way to relate every area of our life to God. Every moment needs to be linked in some way so that we can gradually live in that state of God consciousness, where you're conscious only of the good and the holy and the divine in all people and things. And that's described as living a life that is in spiritual transcendency. So the masses of humanity will tend to curse and complain and rant and rave over life's hardships, over its injustices. And very few have any idea of the whys and the wherefores of life's difficulties because they lack understanding of life's purpose and their purpose within life. And most people err in believing that they need more of something in this world to finally be free from difficulties, like more money, job security, comprehensive insurance, the right partner, to move to some remote island. You know, the list is endless. Yet living even in the midst of one's most ideal fantasy or getaway, the problems persist in appearing nevertheless. We all know that. And even if there are no outer problems, there will be inner problems, like worry about, you know, what might happen in the future, mental agitations, and these will cause sleepless nights even in your fantasy vacation. I think it's interesting how reality TV shows are constantly giving us examples of how no matter who you are or what your position is in life or how wealthy and famous you may be, the same challenges and problems arise. In the most titled and privileged lives, one can see the same fears, mental agitations, and difficult situations. I mean, the same thing. So no matter who we are, we all share very similar challenges in life. Our difficulties are very similar. Like, for example, we all have the challenge of making our way in life, providing for our families, meeting our expenses, taking care of our responsibilities. We all share that. And no matter how much money you have, I've found through personal experience and observation that some of the poorest people are the most wealthy. They may have property and mansions and all that, but no pocket money, no walking around money. They're bound to obligations and loans and investments in the stock market. Their life has become a whole bedful, cot full of bedbugs, of difficulty and harassments. No peace of mind. That's why they take all of these pills, whatever you call them. But they can't sleep at night. So we are all concerned with maintaining our health so we can work and take care of ourselves and meet our responsibilities. I think that's a concern of every person on the planet. And we all face the same uncertainties, an unknown future with possible illness, certain taxes, and death. Yet there is an enormous difference in how one who is totally clueless as to life's purpose and dealing with life's difficulties and how a great soul or a Mahatma deals with them. So we all share this spiritual journey together, in which we move from that clueless ranting and raving state to that ever-serene composure of the enlightened soul, the Mahatma. And like a Mahatma, we will all learn to navigate the white water rapids of life with skillful ease and equanimity. Eventually, we will, believe it or not. And our training, believe it or not, is occurring right now in our life's present arena of daily vexations. Okay. What is the purpose of our life and all of its difficulties? Well, difficulties are meant to put the squeeze on our personalities. Difficulties bring to the surface whatever we have deposited inside of us, life after life after life, and we're held responsible for that. These are the children of our consciousness. The things that we have sown into our life in every thought, word, and deed, which is like a seed that produces a harvest, that we are responsible for. So, the squeeze is put on us by difficulties. We're in that pressure cooker. And up comes everything that we would like to keep under the lid, you know, under the undercover. Like anger, hatred, greed, envy, jealousy, pride, arrogance, fear, insecurity, doubt, wavering, indecisiveness, weakness, cowardice, gossip, slander, criticism, judgment, blame, guilt, shame, deceit, viciousness, cunning, vanity. In a word, our selfishness, in all its many forms. It's the false self or ego, or what some people refer to as their inner demons. And if you want to see a devil, you probably need look no further than in your mirror. And if you want to see the Christ, you need look no further than in your mirror. Because they both dwell within you, ego and Christ, and you choose. But remember, you said you wanted to attain liberation, soul transcendence, self or God realization. You wanted to be anointed, to follow Christ, to be filled with the Holy Spirit and led of the Spirit. You wanted to ascend. You wanted to become an ascended master. Well, however you phrased your request, your prayer was heard and is being answered right now. And this is your training. Yep. Whatever is in your face right now, that's it. So your current difficulty is your lesson, giving you the opportunity to practice dealing with it like a Mahatma, which would be masterfully and lovingly, and peacefully, or not, as the case may be. You have as many trial runs of this as you need or you require. The thing is that whatever you're experiencing, no matter what it is, you've agreed to undergo because you said you wanted to be and to attain the very best and highest spiritual state possible in this lifetime. Yeah, everything you have agreed. You know, before you incarnate, you stand before what is called the karmic board, which is a group of very wise beings that look into with you your whatever it is that you as a soul need to learn or experience to fill out and fulfill your spiritual development, And you decide these things. You decide to come into a material form, to adopt these various she's of consciousness, and you choose when you've had enough and you want to then take the return trip home. And it's all under your governance with the counsel of some very wise and loving beings that want for you only what you want for you and will hold you to what you say you want to accomplish. So there's nobody that's pushing you to make any kind of a choice at that level. It's always according to what would be for your very highest good in that particular lifetime. Some lifetimes are very, very intense, and some you kind of kick back and have a little rest where you don't have to exert so much. So there's a balance there. It isn't always intense. But this lifetime, I would say, probably for everyone, is perhaps the most intense ever, because many, 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 many souls at this time are going to be moving beyond the need for obligatory earth incarnation again. I really believe that with all my heart. And so particularly those of you that like to listen to what we have to share each week. So you were the ones that said, sock it to me, you know, bring it on. I'm ready. I'm up for it. And then when the up for it lands on you, it's like, oh, my heavens. You know, why me? Why is this happening to me? And, of course, we forget everything because we have the veil. So just saying, remind yourself that your current life curriculum is exactly what will take you home by the fastest possible route. It's the answer to your prayer. And you could never possibly ask such a profound prayer as to realize your truth and to be your true self, that it would ever, ever go unanswered. It's like the minute you ask, it is done to you. And then it's your task to walk it out, to undergo the curriculum, the training, the difficulties, whatever, and to keep moving forward in your life. Every time you fall down, you just keep getting up and going at it again and again, and you do fall. We falter and fall regularly. We all err. We all have the same kind of hang-ups and equipment. It's just different degrees for different people in different lifetimes, but we're all the same enchilada. So take heart and know that this is the best for you, whatever it is. Don't look at the outer form. Look at where you're headed. Look at where you're going. You know, nothing is more, at least for me, more painful than delivering a child. That was for me like being on the rack, you know, in the Inquisition. It was horrific. And yet when you hold that baby in your arms, you forget it very quickly. It's like the most horrible pain that is the most rapidly forgotten when you hold that baby in your arms. So when you can stand in your full Mahatmaship and join the ranks of the immortals as a server within these galactic realms and worlds within worlds within worlds of ever-unfolding creations, you're going to know every single thing was so worth it. And you would go through it a billion times if that was what it took to see the face of your beloved. And that, I promise you, you will see. But first you have to see the beloved in your own face and in the faces of those that share your life with you now on this stage of life. But ultimately you'll find that it's always been the one disguised as the many. And in that, you see, there is a great laughter that comes forward when you recall how much you complained and railed against outrageous fortune or misfortune, as the case may be. And you'll just see it all as a big comedic act, you know, a big slapstick buffoonery when it's all said and done. So the length of time that you will need to deal with this present realm of difficulty, whatever it is that you're confronted with, is really entirely up to you, as well as when you will ultimately live in that spiritual state where you no longer experience difficulties as such. Instead, you will see everything in life as a lesson and an opportunity to extend loving light and grace. You become a dispenser of divine light and grace. That's it. And then you've become a Mahatma, because that's basically all they do. Well, not all they do, but that's basically what they do in terms of their attitude and their presentation. And it's all the time, regardless of the circumstance, situation, or environment. So no matter how hard life squeezes a Mahanta, only the sweet nectar of divine loving comes out. Only nectar comes out. And I would see in the most exalted saints and beings that I've been around that they live in absolute yieldedness to spirit. They're like a feather on the breath of God. And they just allow the holy breath to blow them hither and thither, up and down, wherever. And they're completely yielded to that. And that's a stage that we come to before, I think, we attain the stage of Mahatmaship. Because a Mahatma has to be also a wise dispenser and wielder of energy and manifestation. But to get to that state, you have to let the one that thinks it's the doer die. That doing has to die so that you can be yielded and available instrument for the divine spirit to operate through. So the two of the most essential quality prerequisites to that state are forbearance and patience. Without forbearance and patience, Sai Baba has said, it is not possible to realize God. That's pretty strong. He said that of all the qualities, these two are the most essential for every spiritual aspirant to develop and maintain. How? Through dealing with life's difficulties with patient forbearance. So the spiritual path involves exposing in the light of inner spiritual awareness every dark tendency in our personality. There are many negative qualities which must be completely shunned by the devotee. Disciples and initiates in training for mastership know this well. This is a familiar theme to many of you. But, you know, when I say devotees and disciples and initiates, that pretty well covers all of us and anyone who is a regular listener to these weekly seminars. But in particular, we must uproot and transcend any hatred, jealousy, even the tiniest hint of hatred and jealousy. And we must recognize and release any attachments we have to persons, possessions, even to certain states of consciousness. And we need to live focused only upon the lasting and eternal, not the things of this passing world. This is hard to do because the world is very engaging. It has a million ways to distract your attention from the things that are eternal. And so it's a spiritual practice just moving through your daily life. It's really a full-time spiritual practice. To practice the presence of God, to practice staying focused upon discerning the real from the unreal, darkness from light, death from immortality. And that's the path. It's called the razor's edge. So attachment, hatred, and jealousy, and their sidekick, anger, are the most deadly enemy of the devotee. So if we have these evil qualities, even in the smallest measure, we will not be able to progress spiritually and attain liberation. So the practice of forbearance and patience in doing our spiritual practice with steadfast devotion and putting into practice these teachings of forbearance and patience, that is what will keep us on the straight and narrow path to God realization and immortality. And every step you take in that direction, I don't care how many times you falter and fall, you will be making progress. And the little steps that you take, God will take 1,000 or 10,000 to advance you with just a little bit of effort on your part. That's where grace comes in and comes right up under you and supports you in your spiritual path. And your sincerity and your devotion earn you that grace. So let's have some examples. See what Sai Baba has to say about forbearance and patience. Embodiments of love. Forbearance is the heart of all spiritual practice. It is the one quality which all spiritual aspirants must achieve in their lifetime. For the truly wise, for the great sages and great souls, forbearance is their very splendor, their penance, their sacrifice, their righteousness. It is their wisdom, their immeasurable love. Forbearance is the essence of their nonviolence, their compassion, their depth of happiness. Forbearance is the very mark of all great beings. Truly, forbearance is everything. Without forbearance, it is not possible to realize the truth of the Atma, to manifest the everlasting and ever-luminous divine presence that shines undiminishably within you. So we have to realize this Atma, this divine spirit that we are, through our direct experience. It isn't something that you can learn from another, although another can set an example, give you wise teachings and counsel. You actually only know and possess experientially what you have directly experienced. And the thing is, as long as we think that our body is real and our divinity is not real, we will not understand the principle of the Atma. As long as we identify ourselves with our body and not with our essential truth, our real self, we will not be able to gain the direct experience of our indwelling divinity. So that's the first place we have to start, is to begin to train ourselves to remember, to remind ourselves. You know, many, many little tools and gimmicks. I used to write out 3x5 cards from the Course in Miracles and carry them with me to work. I'd put them in my cash register. I'd open the cash register and there would be a picture of Sai Baba and the Course in Miracles lesson for the day or whatever. In my home, I would put 3x5 cards over my bathroom mirror, wherever I would sit. And even when I later would take those cards down, I found that when I looked at that spot on the wall, I would remember the saying. So I created an environment in which the truths that I was seeking to embody and to internalize were in my environment and in my face constantly as reminders. And I think you need that kind of cue cards, if you will, to keep on purpose as you go about your daily life. Otherwise, you get all caught up in the maya of the daily workaday, busy outer world, the traffic snarls and the phone ringing and the constant distractions that you have as you move about the day. But on the other hand, it's a perfect arena for practicing forbearance and patience. It's just absolutely ideal. So see if you can find ways to remind yourself that you are not the body. Really begin to contemplate and ponder that on a daily basis. Begin to realize and see that the listener is who is listening. The seer is behind the eyes, the actor is behind the motions of the body. And that listener and seer and actor is the Atma, the I Am presence that is you, as the immortal indweller in all of these vehicles of expression. And really work at it, because you're not going to get much reinforcement in the Western world, where very many people are identified with their body, their positions, their jobs, their titles, but they're not generally aware of the deeper aspects of life. It's different in India, where it's like spirituality is kind of born with people. Even if they try to be worldly, they don't quite pull it off, because by nature they are lovers of God. And that's why I love India so much. It's amazing to be in a land where people understand the fundamental basis of life. And it's a given. It comes in the mother's milk. And it's in the atmosphere that's thousands and thousands of years old, filled with the breath emanations and auric emanations of countless sages and avatars and realized individuals. It's quite amazing. So, Sai Baba says that the way to immortality is the removal of immorality, and that it's only when we remove the immorality within me that we will be able to gain immortality. Because, you see, everything that is of the flesh, the works of the flesh, the thoughts of the flesh, the flesh itself, it returns to the elements when you discard the body. The only thing that you take with you into eternity is the truth of who you are, which is an immortal soul, and the love that you have given and the love you have received. Everything else is going to be discarded. Everything. We take nothing with us but who we are, stripped of all that's not that. So in the Bible, when it says that the works of the flesh go into fire, the fire of the devouring fire, that's actually what they're meaning. It's kind of scary because we think we're going to be fried in this hell pit for eternity, but that's not exactly, some people have that belief system and they manifest that for themselves, but it's temporary. It's always temporary and it's a state of illusion. Or it would be called in Buddhism the bardo of the wrathful deities. And the way to go through the bardo of the wrathful deities, you have to actually see the wrathful deities as aspects of your own consciousness, as yourself. That's why I say, if you want to see a devil, look in the mirror. If you want to see an angel, look in the mirror. If you want to see God, look in the mirror. If you want to see the Christ, look in the mirror. If you want to see the Beloved, look in the mirror. It's you. It's what you call it. It's what you interpret it. It's what you project. You are an incarnation of the living God. And because you haven't quite matured into living from that state, doesn't mean that you're not creative. Doesn't mean that you don't create your afterlife state by the state that you have habitually postulated as your reality. So again, it's important to do these things while you're here in a body, because once you get on the other side, you don't have that same freedom. You have a certain freedom, but not unless you are liberated and initiated at a certain level. You don't have a lot of freedom. You just kind of meet your own experiences and your own fabrications until you're able to transcend into the soul plane. So just saying, all the works of the flesh end up consumed and do not go with you. There is a repository on each level where the quintessential essence of the experiences you've had is kept like a bank account. And that is drawn upon when you build your next body for the next incarnation. You tap that reservoir of distilled experience in your previous lifetime so you don't lose that. But the ego states, the states of where you're just operating out of the total false self, those states don't go with you. Just the good and the noble and the pure and the wholesome and edifying things that you've experienced, that goes with you in your permanent atoms, they're called. So there's a great science to life. There's a great science to consciousness. There's a great divine science that governs the goings and the comings of souls and their maturation and their involution into matter and their evolution back into the state of pure divinity. And we are now on that homeward arc of ascension where we are returning to God, and we're jettisoning all that is not divine in that process. And that's simply the path that we've called the path of ascension or the path of soul transcendence. Doesn't matter what you call it, we're going to be doing it whether we know about it or not. That's simply what's happening. So it's the weaknesses that we have in our nature, such as jealousy and hatred and anger and pride, and all these evils which have obscured our ability to perceive the truth of our divinity. They stand like a dweller on the threshold, or as the great Satan, as often it's referred to in the scriptures. But it's actually just ignorance of divinity that presents in this dweller on the threshold, which takes sometimes a very menacing form, a wrathful deity kind of form, as the Tibetans have so often portrayed it in their iconology. So we'll be able to enjoy the strength of the unchanging presence of divinity within us as we begin to jettison these weaknesses, and we jettison them within the midst of the pressure cooker of difficulty. It's at that time that those things begin to surface, you know, when the squeeze is put upon us. The things that maybe we could keep under wraps, you know, when everything was going fine. The anger erupts, you know, when someone challenges our authority. The control comes up when we see things not going our way. The desire to manipulate and misuse our power arises when we want a certain outcome and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. You know, all the little petty larcenies of the unregenerate self begin to surface in the difficulties of life. And instead of faulting ourselves when these things happen, we need to really rejoice, because the minute you recognize that you're in ego, you have transcended the ego. Because when you're in a karmic state, it's totally unconscious. When you're in reactive mode, you go completely unconscious. You're out of control. Nobody's home. Lights are off. You're just ego manifesting darkness. So when you begin to distance yourself from your body and from your behavior, and you begin to look from the balcony of higher spiritual awareness, you'll be able to catch yourself, and you'll say, oh, wow, can't believe that, you know, that ego came up, and man, I was biting that person's head off and snarling like a vicious dog. In fact, Sai Baba, he describes an angry person like a dog snarling at its reflection in the mirror. That was funny, because I was watching Dog Whisperer the other day, and there was just such a dog that was phobic about his own image in the mirror. He was snarling and attacking that image, and it was himself. And I thought, boy, that's like Baba said that we are when we go into anger. And like a dog, you know, attacking our own reflection in the mirror. So, you know, remind yourself of these little nonsenses, because that way you'll begin to disidentify from these lower behavioral traits. You know, never own them. There's no ego in you. There's no evil in you. You are the eternally pure, holy, divine Atma. You know, so this is just assumed dust, the dust of many incarnations and immersions in matter, but it's not who you are. So let the dust fall away and let your brilliance come forward. And, you know, don't worry about any of it. Just keep moving toward the reality. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there are 26 virtues that are mentioned. And Sai Baba said that when you embody at least one or two of the 26 virtues and understand their deeper meaning and practice them so that you make them part of your daily life, then it's possible for you to realize the immortal nature of the Atma. And of the many virtuous qualities that a devotee can develop, forbearance is at the heart of them all. And he likens the 26 virtues is like a box of matches. You don't need to strike all 50 matches in the box to light a fire. One will do. So if you study the Bhagavad Gita or the Bible or the Quran or the Shariat Ki Sugmad or the teachings of the travelers or whatever it is that is your spiritual path, if you pick one or two qualities and practice them diligently, then that's enough. Just pick something that, you know, really draws your attention. Like my practice is love. I only am interested in being love. I'm only interested in expressing love. And the only thing I want to see in anyone is their divinity. I don't want to look at anything else or see anything else, just that. So my practice is to see the good and the divine in all people and things, and to leave the rest to God. And no matter what, to embrace all, love all, and serve all. And that's my spiritual path. That's what I've been doing for many, many decades now. And it's become automatic. I don't even have to think about it. That's my go-to. That's my state. That's what I embody. That's how I live. And yeah, you know, you have off days, your off moments. I won't say I have off days anymore. I have off seconds more than days because I catch myself, because it's so painful when I step into ego mode. It's really, really excruciating, and it's so unpleasant that I very quickly backtrack out of that and get back on track. So pick something that works for you and work it. So let's see what else he has to say. It's only by sticking faithfully to your spiritual practice when you are under trying circumstances that you will be able to acquire forbearance. It's when you're under the test in situations which are full of problems and difficulties that the cultivation of forbearance takes place. Under those trying circumstances, weaknesses which are hidden within you will show their ugly heads, and they manifest in you as anger, fear, arrogance, hatred, and many other egocentric evils that cover your essential truth. It is at such times that you must recognize these weaknesses and rise above them. Whatever action you must undertake that whatever is appropriate to the situation, and your inner state must be unaffected and rooted in unwavering peace and love. This is the practice of forbearance. I had some real tests this week come up for me. And I was really, really wrestling with an ego momentum. And it was stronger than my ability and capacity to know how to manage it. So I asked Sai Baba that through his grace, he would just fill me with his love. Fill me so much with love that it would just dissolve the energy of what I was working with or contending with. And it was like a miracle. I went from this state of, I would say, great agitation to where I had nothing in me but love, nothing in me at all but love. All of the conflict, all of the fight, all of the ego, all of it simply vanished. So I do believe that you can ask in the midst of your worst awfuls that through grace, God, through His Holy Spirit, would fill you would fill you with His love, His light, His comprehension, His forbearance. This is where you can rightfully default on God. Rightfully so, because you are God. You know, strip away all the ego stuff, all the shenanigans, and there's only God living in every form. There's only the divine. So it's within your right as a child of God to want to be like your Father in every way, like Jesus. It's your right to ask for the bread, you know, and eat at the Master's table. So I just present that to you as a very effective tool. Don't think you have to do it all yourself. In fact, I think the less we take ownership and authorship of any doing, the better. Let the doer die. That's the real meaning of the crucifixion on the cross. Let the ego be crossed out on the cross of time and space, and let the Christ arise in that radiant form. Because that's the truth, not the dying figure on the cross. That's the dropping away of the illusion of body consciousness and pain and all that goes with identifying with the form. And allow the Christ that you are to resurrect to eternal life. You're made for that. That's what God implanted as a blueprint, as a divine blueprint in each soul. And Jesus came as the elder brother to enact that on the stage of life so that we could see what that looks like, to keep laying down your life at the feet of the Lord, to keep yielding, to keep surrendering, to keep letting go, to keep, not my will, Father, but thine be done. He embodied that perfectly and did the hard work. You know, now we just have to walk in his footsteps and love and serve all. That's what we're here to do. Love all, serve all. That's it. And don't let anything ruffle your peace. Find a way to be forbearant. And as I said, you know, I was neither patient nor forbearant at that moment. I was in great reactive, I would say, fear. I was in great contraction. That's another key. You'll notice whenever you're in ego, you're in a constricted and contracted state, even bodily. You'll start to write really, really small. You know, practice if you see you have really small handwriting. Practice writing really large, very flourishing. Get yourself out there energetically in your writing. One of the things I practiced when I was going through my recent escapade was that I felt like closing down, closing off, and contracting. And instead, I sat up straight. I raised my arms out on either side. I turned my face up, and I said, yes, yes, I embrace this. I totally embrace this. I take it all into my being, all my love. I take it all in. Christ in me takes it all in. And I told you how every bodily motion and position equates with a state of consciousness. When you feel fearful and contracted, instead of closing in and hunching your shoulders and looking down, do just the opposite. Look up, expand your chest, raise your arms out on either side, open your palms, and say yes to life, yes to Christ, yes to the Holy Spirit, yes to Sai Baba, yes to the spiritual traveler, yes to the Mahanta, yes to Maitreya, whatever it is, whoever it is that is your divine ideal. Say yes, yes to the universe, yes to the Ashtar Command, yes to life. And you'll be amazed at how your consciousness will shift up to match the neurological impetus that your posture has given. It's amazing. And likewise, if you feel angry, drink some cold water, unclench your jaw. Try to sleep if you possibly can. Try to go apart and be quiet and sleep. That's what Sai Baba said. Drink some cold water. Cool down. Unclench your fists. Bring your shoulders into relaxation. Your jaw, your mouth, your gums, your teeth. Breathe deeply, because when you're angry, you will shallow breathe. You'll hold your breath. Relax. Take this anger, Lord. There is no anger in you, and there's no anger in me. Give me the peace of God. I choose the peace of God instead of this. I choose your love, Father. Stretch me beyond all personal pettiness. Evict from me every single semblance of self-importance and self-glorification. Let me be just pure love. That may be your presentation of love. Speak through the mouth. Look through the eyes. Listen through the ears. Touch through the hands. Heal and comfort and edify and uplift through this body-mind complex. Let you be the sole indweller of this being wearing this name that I've thought was my name, but is really your name and your form and your incarnation. And that way you see you are practicing the presence of God like a spiritual warrior, not like a wimp, like a spiritual warrior. You're doing the battle. And the battle is always with the inner enemies of peace. Peace is always God's answer. Peace is always a choice that we can make, because peace is always present. The only agitation comes from the mind, the ego mind and its projection. So begin to catch yourself when you try to project vengeance and negativity where none exists. There's only God. There's only love. And everything else is something the mind has made up. So change your mind. Give it to Christ. Give it to the Lord. And step free through grace. And that's the easiest way to practice patience and forbearance. God is in control. Everything happens as it must according to your contracted karmic field, your lessons, your curriculum. Nothing is happening that is not for your highest good. Everything that's happening is taking you home by the fastest possible route. Everything is something you have chosen. And it's all good because it's all God. It's all God. There's nothing else but God. So I hope this has been helpful to you. It was sure a helpful teaching for me, because I'm sharing what I practice and have experienced, and I'm certainly no different than anyone else. And it's a battle, you know, fighting that lower nature and all of its craziness. But we are assured by Sai Baba that we will succeed. He has come for that very purpose, to make certain that we are able to succeed in self-realization. And he's here to grant us liberation in this very life, if that's what you want. Some of the things I shared today came from a marvelous book by my friend Al Drucker, great devotee of Sai Baba and a self-realized man. And it's called Sai Baba Gita, The Way to Self-Realization and Liberation in This Age. And you can probably get it on Amazon and at the Satya Sai Book Center of America in Tustin, California. So you can go online and get it. I highly recommend it. So let's raise our palms and send light to all the worlds and all the beings. Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu. May all worlds have peace. May all worlds have happiness. May all beings realize their divine self. And we'll close with three shantis. One om and three shantis. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Namaste.